This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The best filmmakers craft a world so vivid that viewers can imagine themselves living alongside the characters. And for this edition of Movies on the Radio, we want to know what cinematic universe you most want to live in. Is it the magic-filled halls of Hogwarts or the grit and glamour of The Thin Man set in 1930s New York? To help us break down your picks are movie experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. Marcia is a film professor at North Carolina State University. Welcome back, Marcia.
So glad to be here.
Good to have you here. Laura Boies, film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art and curator of the Movie Diva film series screening at the Carolina Theater. Hello, Laura.
That's a mouthful. I thank you for that.
You are, just because you're so busy. You got so many job titles. Kind of great stuff. Cinematic spaces, this actually proved a little bit more challenging than we thought. But there are really good examples of it. Interestingly enough, a great example that never really turned up that listeners didn't call in about, which would be The Wizard of Oz, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, that's a perfect one because this is a world that, of course, Dorothy inhabits for the bulk of that amazing 1939 film. And it's not a perfect world, right? It's not a magic. There's people trying to get her and all kinds of terrible things happening, but she creates this coalition and she manages to navigate it. And then she makes a decision to go back home and to leave the world. And what I find interesting about that decision is that, you know, nothing has changed back in Kansas, and terrible things will likely be happening at home too. And I wonder if you didn't flash forward another week, if Dorothy wouldn't be waiting to get hit on the head and go back to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no place like Oz.
Yeah, exactly. That's the sequel.
Yeah, and it is. And I think it's also the cinematic version of that. It's like if Hollywood's saying, if anybody can take you to a better place, it's us. Watch, we're going to take black and white Kansas, turn it into color Oz. This is us. This is what Hollywood can do. Put you in another place.
Yeah, but the other thing, of course, is that so many films, you know, there are bits and pieces that you might admire. I mean, that's certainly the case for me. Maybe I like the fashion in this film and the architecture in this film and the way characters talk to each other in this film. But films aren't necessarily about conflict and about drama. And so there are very few films that just offer a kind of utopia where nothing ever bad happens, right? Because then you would have a really boring movie.
Well, also, films are a perfect venue for time travel, you know, both in the imaginary worlds of the past, but also let's go shopping in the 1920s or let's have a cocktail in, as you say, 1930s New York. But for me, there's always that caveat. I want to make sure I have glasses, penicillin, tampons, and birth control. Because I'm not going back in time without
at least
those
it's
things.
A small suitcase.
Although, as my daughter points out in the movies, nobody has to go to the bathroom at all. So that's part of the fantasy.
Never happens unless it's Ace Ventura or something like that.
Pulp Fiction.
Then that's all they do. They spend the entire time there. Or you could actually just float down a river of chocolate.
Hi, this is Rini Fetters calling from Raleigh, and I chose Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory because of the incredible cinematography, all the colors that pop in. Who would not want to swim in a river full of chocolate? An oral fixator's delight. And my favorite scene that made me select this was the riverboat scene, which was just crazy off the chain.
Hang on, where are we going?
I don't know, but I don't like the looks of that tunnel up there.
Hey, Wonka, I want off!
Round the world and home again. That's the sailor's way.
I don't mind this ride, Daddy.
Wonka, ask me a favor. Tell those people to stop bubbling from the...
We're going too fast.
Fast.
We're going to sink. I know. It's going to be stopped the boat.
Fast.
Hang on, darling. Just close your eyes and hang on tight.
What is this, a freak out?
Hey, this isn't funny, Wonka.
You can't possibly see where you're going, Wonka.
You're right. I can't.
Boy, what a great series this would make.
And who doesn't want to dance with Oompa Loompas? That's really what I want to do, is dance and sing with Oompa Loompas.
Oompa Loompa, doompa-dee-doo, I've got a perfect puzzle for you. Oompa Loompa, doompa-dee-dee, if you are wise, you'll listen to me.
What do you get when you guzzle down?
Well, anyway, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I think the ultimate dystopia is that Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, but I bet Rainey throws a good party.
Well, I think Willy Wonka is so terrifying because Gene Wilder plays him with such menace that I'm very curious how this was ever considered to be a children's film at all.
Well, yeah, all of that Roald Dahl stuff is
so scary.
Walks the line.
Yeah. 1971, too. I mean, what was happening then? It was a popular movie then, but weird, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but I think that's part of its wonder, right, is that it was depicting this very, very strange and kind of not normal world with all of these excesses, including the color and all of the things that Rainey talked about. But
And it's a movie that both adults and children can understand on different levels, too, which is another thing that makes it appealing for the whole family.
It would be interesting to ask, you know, a kid who just saw that film for the first time, like, would you want to live in that world?
Yeah.
Because I wonder, I don't know that many would say yes. Maybe they would.
It's hard to know. If you can focus on just the chocolate and the Oompa Loompas, that's
and if
a
you're convinced
song.
That you are Charlie.
Kid. Yeah.
And not the other horrible children.
Yes.
That's it. It's who you identify with.
That's right.
Well, then there's also sequels to, for instance, Peter Pan. Let's take a look at who loves the movie Hook.
My name is Erin Terry. I'm out of Raleigh. I chose the movie Hook. I think as a child of the 90s, I grew up watching a lot of various classics, but Hook really stuck with me. There was Neverland, which Peter Pan has to go back to, and Robin Williams in that role is so good. But more importantly, there were all these children who never had to grow up, and I wanted to be a Lost Boy so bad, and I wanted to meet Rufio and learn how to sword fight. But the magic is implied in this Neverland, and I just really loved, like, even just that food fight scene where they have empty bowls in front of them, and they're telling Peter, like, imagine it, and then suddenly there's a feast that appears out of nowhere right in front of them.
What's the deal? Where's the real food?
If you can't imagine yourself being Peter Pan, you won't be Peter Pan, so eat up!
Eat what? There's nothing here. Gandhi ate more than this.
Don't you remember this used to be your favorite game?
Manny, Manny is Manny! Manny, Manny, Manny is Manny! Manny, Manny,
Manny! Oh, Rufio, why don't you just go suck on a dead dog's nose?
They're able to throw food at each other. It's just so cool to think there was a place where parents weren't there and you could just live in a treehouse and fly around and skateboard. I mean, that's the world I still would want to live in.
1991, the film Hook, Dustin Hoffman and Robin Williams. Laura, what do you think about it?
Well, the Peter Pan story written by J.M. Barrie has a very firm hold on our imagination because has there ever been a person that wished that they didn't have to grow up and parents who wish that their children didn't have to grow up and that magical land that you go to where you retain the pleasures of childhood. It's a very powerful fantasy.
Well, and it makes me think, if you would have asked me this question when I was young and had just kind of seen a couple of big films that were influential to me when I was a kid, like Black Stallion and E.T., I mean, I would have said, like, what was so magical about those films was that there were kids who were empathetic and heroic and were, doing, active and solving problems on their own and isolated in their own way. And so it's all part of that lineage of this particular story.
Which suggests that no matter where the place is, it's still always about character and about story. And that's one of the interesting things. And I think one of the challenges.
And tapping into universal emotions.
In a place or even a creepy place, ostensibly a charming place like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. And then there's 1930s New York.
This is Linda Watson in Raleigh, North Carolina. My pick is The Thin Man. Not only is it wealth and fantastic clothes, she has great hats. Laura Boyce herself once gave me some life advice, which was, when you don't know what to do and you're flustered, imagine that you're Nora Charles in a fantastic hat. So this is why I want to live in that world, because I often project myself into that world. But they have a marital relationship that's just fantastic, not one that was portrayed in those times, and really one that's not portrayed very often now. They had snappy banter, but they had strong opinions, and she absolutely pulled her weight as a detective.
Nikki, did you see this laundry list from Bauer's pocket?
Yeah, we'll get to it later.
It's a woman's laundry list.
Well, maybe he had a wife.
25 kimonos? That's a harem.
Bloodhound. Oh, Lieutenant, I think this laundry list of Bauer's might interest you.
3 bloomers, 25 kimonos, 10 slips, 5 panties, 15 chemises.
Hmm. Sounds like wash day at Vassar.
Hey, that's the list that was in Stephen's ledger. The one I found in the drawer.
Apparently, the slip of the ledger must have parted company somewhere.
It was fun to see them work on projects together and have a sexy, loving relationship with lots of room service.
What's not to like? 1934, Thin Man.
And yeah. Cocktails. Don't forget
yes,
the cocktails.
Yes, cocktails. Lots of cocktails.
And never getting drunk on your cocktails, which is because you drink them out of those tiny little thimble-sized glasses.
Besides, there's no bathroom.
That's right.
Well, that idea of two people being on even par in that scene where Nora comes in and catches up with the cocktails at the bar, and no matter whether it's the drinking or the talking, but that they both have good lines, they're both equal matches for each other. Their bickering is amusing and never taken to heart. I mean, it's just, it's a really lovely kind of imagination of a relationship that is really a kind of a pleasure for everyone.
Because I agree that happily ever after as a married couple is rarely seen on screen, and that's what's so great about the
Thin Man. We'll talk more about that. The time also pre-code, whether or not that had anything to do with it. It was a sassier time in the movies. We're talking today about places in the movies that you would like to live with Laurel Boys, Marcia Gordon, and you on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Movies on the radio today, film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys. Marcia, a film professor at North Carolina State. Laura, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and the movie Diva film series screening at the Carolina Theater. Busy lady and had time for us today and also time to give life advice to people like Linda Watson.
Which I don't remember ever telling
you.
You
are always giving, just a moments ago, you gave us travel advice. And I have never forgotten how you told me always to carry birth control tampons in my glasses wherever I go. So no, you're the one. You're absolutely the one. Places, though, when we talk about them, it's so much of that. I mean, for me, that is it. It's New York anytime before 1950. I think any place, too. It can be the Upper East Side or it can be the Bowery, because it just seemed like a gritty, charming place. But the thing that made it that way was not so much the traffic and the marquees, I think, as the snappy banter. So we get back to character.
Snappy banter is so important.
Yeah. Well, and so many movies took place in New York and in Los Angeles, so it would be very natural for people to think of those two places in terms of the imagination.
You think Duluth, Minnesota does not have the same snappy
not
banter?
Not high on the list.
No, but the funny thing is, when the movies that take place in L.A. and in San Francisco, the Maltese Falcon, it still sounds like New Jersey, right? I mean, everybody's talking like this. They're in San Francisco, but still, this is what they're saying. It's amazing to me. Robin Hood, on the other hand, a different place and a different time altogether. And this was your favorite, Laura. This is
yes. I had to give a lot of thought to this too. First of all, we have to start out once again that it's in Technicolor, the most beautiful way the world ever looked.
Those tights glimmered.
They do. We're robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. We're rebelling against a pretender to the throne and restoring the rightful king, which is perfect for
today. Anytime now.
Perfect for today. Of course, I want to be a cross-dressing merry man. I have no interest in being a damsel in distress. And I loved it so much. My mother even traded giving some piano lessons so I could have some fencing lessons in high school, at which I was even less talented than the boy on the piano. But it was exhilarating for me to have a little sword play of my own.
Did she give you diction lessons so that you could talk like this?
Welcome to Sherwood, my lady.
What's Sir Guy? No greeting from you?
Why, that's curious. I've often heard that you'd give me a warm welcome if ever we met again.
You're going to permit this insolence without even...
fighting? I'm afraid he has no choice, my lady.
Well, I have, you impudent rascal. You're not going to harm with my lamb, my honeysuckle.
Be still, Bess.
Besides, we've nothing but the most peaceable intentions, have we, men?
The only one that spoke his pretty next.
Let's Away, the 1938 film The Adventures of Robin Hood, starring Errol Flynn, Olivia de Havilland, and that is film expert Laura Boy's pick for the place that she would most like to live. But again, kind of a psychic environment, right, where these virtues were earnestly held and defended.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, and the scene that I love so much in that film is when Robin captures Sir Guy's party in Sherwood, of course.
Yes.
And it's that sense of justice and putting, the rags on the rich, and you just... You want that to happen in the world.
And
right?
It's the most awesome picnic ever.
But it's not just the avenging, the avenging for justice in the uniform. It's actually the outlaw. And I think that's one of the more charming features of this thing, where it's the one who is considered the outlaw who's actually the good guy, which is also makes it a cool place.
Well, and it's also very much in keeping in some ways with the history of the Warner Brothers, which was, of course, the gangster film they were so well known for in the decade leading up to that, which was about the outsider figure who also had this kind of romantic appeal, even if he always died at the end because he had to.
Let's listen to our next pick.
My name is Ricky Garney. I'm calling from Carrboro, North Carolina. And the cinematic universe I would want to enter into today would be that of Marty, filmed in 1955 in New York. To me, this is a world that I would be very happy to inhabit forever. With all the pain and anguish that Marty, as a very lonely middle-aged man, experiences, he still lives in a place of great beauty and wonder with the lovers of his family and of his friends, and the sort of things he embraces in this world, which is everything from the family and, people that surround him at the butcher store to the idea of going out for a date at a ballroom rather than a club. It's definitely a place of beauty in terms of an old Bronx that no longer exists, but it's also a place that sort of speaks of the glorious love that you can have between two people who have been shunned by others for what is considered the lack of physical beauty. But in fact, I think anyone who sees this movie will agree that they're kind of gloriously gorgeous.
I've begun to cry a lot lately.
Well, I cry a lot too. I'm a big crier.
This is something very recent with me, this bursting into tears at the slightest thing.
Well, I cry all the time, any little thing. All my brothers-in-law, they're always telling me what a good-hearted guy I am. You don't get to be good-hearted by accident. You get kicked around long enough, you get to be a real professor of pain. I know exactly how you feel. And I also want you to know I'm having a very good time with you right now and really enjoying myself. But you see, you're not such a dog as you think you are.
There we go, the 1955 movie Marty. I'm here with Marcia Gordon, who is a film professor at North Carolina State, and Laura Boyes, film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art.
That's such a sweet, humble choice. I love that selection of just like good people trying to figure out a way to make it in a world that's a little bit cruel, but all of the kind of positive, loving things that come out of it. So I applaud the listener for that choice.
It also evokes that sense of community that we all hunger for, that his neighborhood in the Bronx is a self-contained little world where the interactions that you have with people have a lot of meaning. And I think as we become more and more socially isolated, that kind of community has a lot of appeal.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the place really does. I mean, I think you put it beautifully, that there's this emotional space that you occupy with this guy and, trying to sort of make it in a world, and he's not particularly attractive. And all the stuff around him, the butcher shop, the cafe where they have these conversations, kind of reinforces that space.
Well, and films do provide us with that sense of an imaginary community, right, where we are kind of diving into people's private lives, even if they are fabricated and very public on the other hand. And so I think that the films like this, and even Robin Hood, really is about community, right?
Right.
The community coming together to uprise against the evil, wealthy stealers of everything. That's one of the key kind of concepts that people take. Yeah.
And you can either be put in some exotic place that you've never seen before or a place that looks very familiar and warm.
Yeah.
Marcia, I want to hear about your pick because I know you had a hard time.
I struggled. This is all I've done for the past week. Good thing I don't have to get ready for classes or anything this week. But part of it is there is no cinematic universe in which I want to live. I'm perfectly okay living in our world, imperfect though it is. But when I started thinking about what are the things that I wish I could do, I wish I could go back into a number of films, but especially I would say the films of the 1930s and raid people's closets because I know Laura and I share this, love the fashion in the 1930s films. And it's not always the high fashion. It's not always the most glamorous Adrian gowns. It's really more often what the department store clerks are able to buy and wear. But so just as one example, I mentioned a film, The Women, which is a very catty film. I'm not saying that I want to occupy the world of the women, but in the middle of this black and white film is this incredible technicolor Laura and I on the same page here, sequence that is a fashion show in the middle of the film that is an experience for the audience and for the characters.
Bonjour, mesdames, mademoiselles. It gives me great pleasure to be your cicerone on our adventurous little voyage into fashion land. But today, ladies, as an innovation, you will see the models go through the rhythmic movement of everyday life, and you will be able to study the flow of the new line as it responds to the ever-changing flow of the female form divine. Et maintenant, our little peep into the coming season. And a glimpse of the future, too. Lumière, musique.
That's how we're going to start this show, Lumiere Music.
Exactly. Not Professor of Pain, which has resonated with me as well. But every time I thought of another film that I loved the fashion in, there's also sexual harassment and all this terrible stuff that happens. And so anyhow, so I just want to go back in time and raid the closets of all of these
I never understand when people say, and the movie just grinds to a halt and we have to sit through this fashion show. It's like, are you out of your mind?
Why'd they make it so short?
I want 98 minutes of this.
I agree.
Tennis outfits that we missed, by the way, that was what was happening
and
during the music.
Even the monkeys have cute outfits in that particular sequence.
But you also
designed by Adrian.
That's right.
You wanted to highlight too, Marcia, the film In the Mood for Love.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. So I'm not just exclusive to the 1930s and the fashion in those films. Wong Kar-wai's really beautiful, beautiful film, In the Mood for Love. The music's beautiful, the aesthetics, but the dresses. Mm. I would like to have every single one of these beautiful Hong Kong dresses.
That's why I like Midnight Cowboy. I really like the outfits. And the hats I thought were great.
I'm proud of you for admitting that.
I love the hats. Harold and Maude, this is an interesting choice. Let's listen.
My name is Lynn Elwell, and I live in Durham, North Carolina. And the cinematic world that I would like to live in is the one represented by the movie Harold and Maude. Court is a young guy. He's around 20. He's the son of a very humorless and controlling mother, living in very great wealth and privilege, and his mother is anxious for him to get married, and he has no interest in getting married, and is really obsessed with death, and he attends funerals of old people that he doesn't even know. And at one of these funerals, he meets and falls in love with Ruth Gordon, who is a much older woman. She's in her late 70s or maybe early 80s. The two of them commence to have a very unconventional and whirlwind romance.
What a delight it is, Harold, to bump into you again. I knew we were going to be good friends the moment I saw you. You go to funerals often, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so do I. They're such fun, aren't they? It's all change, all revolving. Burials and births, one linked to the other. The great circle of life. This whole thing handles well. Ever drive a hearse, Harold?
Yeah.
It's a new experience for me. What a hearse. Shall I take you home, Harold?
This is my car.
Your hearse?
Yours.
Oh!
1971 film. Harold and Maude, starring Bud Cort and Ruth Gordon.
Well, they do live in a kind of wacky, free world. It's also pretty dark, with suicide attempts and all manner of other things. So that it's a very
interesting. They were driving a
hearse. It's a very interesting.
And as I recall, Maude is a Holocaust survivor, is she not?
That's right. So, she has the tattoo.
So it's her reclaiming her life after the most horrible of experiences.
But it's also really, at its core, if you stripped it down to what it's about people who are not living by the rules of convention and who are doing what they want. And that's the thing about Ruth Gordon's character that's so amazing, is she's such a free, wild spirit, even if there's also a darkness.
And usually it's young people that behave that way. So they're role reversed in that way.
Well, juxtaposition, I think, is what makes this film work, and it's the juxtaposition of the space in which he lives, right, the opulent kind of living and the future that his mother had laid out for him, juxtaposed against the world in which they want to live, which is an emotional space. And so you've got this emotional space against the tangible, and that creates the new universe, which is invisible, but I think ultimately beautiful in a film like this.
Yeah, right. I mean, that idea of kind of trying to seek joy and the pleasures in where you can find it.
Almost outside of the space. Well, here's a space that doesn't exist either. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Chris Monroe. I'm calling from Fuquay Varina in North Carolina. And the cinematic universe I'd most like to live in is the Star Trek universe.
1 minute to space doors. Are you just going to walk through them?
Calm yourself, Doctor.
Sir. Excelsior powering up with orders to pursue.
Secure space doors. Warning, secure space doors. Warning, secure space doors.
Now, Mr. Scott.
Sir?
The doors, Mr. Scott.
Hi, sir. I'm working on it.
We have cleared space doors.
The reason I chose that is because I feel like that universe sort of best represents the principles of tolerance and equality, acceptance of diversity, even celebration of it. And I felt like, you know, as a white, straight male, you know, I'd probably be safe in most universes, except the most dystopian ones. But the Star Trek universe in particular, if I didn't know that that was going to be my situation, if I might be a woman or a person of color or queer, that I feel like I would have the best chance of being accepted in that universe.
We're talking about, in this case, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. That was 1984, talking to Marsha Gordon and Laura Boys about that place.
Well, I'm a total Star Trek nerd, and I'm completely on board with everything that he says. On board, I didn't mean that. But yes, there is a place for you in that universe, and part of the Star Trek universe for me, like where you saw the kids in Harry Potter grow up, we saw the people in the Star Trek universe grow old. And so that gave it a deeper resonance. And as the movies went on, of course, they tried to be even more representational of diversity, even though the original concept of the show had been pushing those kinds of boundaries.
But it's not just the diversity. It is also awesome adventure and exploration and all of the stuff in science and technology. And so it's letting everyone maybe play in that space. But that at the core is, I mean, that's what I grew up loving.
And it's the relationships between the characters. It's right. Very, very character-based.
You know, it's interesting because certainly with the TV series, that was it. It was all about those characters and the ways in which they played off of each other. And yet, even in the TV series, as clumsy as some of it looks now, those spaces, those exotic galactic spaces they created were tangible and really places that you actually wouldn't want to live, but would be a great place to visit, I think.
And I watched the original TV show on a black and white TV, which made, you know, your imagination color it in a very vivid way. And even now I see like an episode in color and it's like, oh, really?
What color were your tribbles?
Yeah. They were gray and gray.
They were. That's the trouble with tribbles. Do you know what I wanted? Did you have more to say about Star Trek?
I do not.
Because I was thinking about a film where space was everything and they couldn't do it. And the film Ironweed. I'm one of nine people in America who saw the film. because I read the book. It was a Pulitzer Prize winning book by William Kennedy, a novel, a brilliant book about a baseball player who's basically losing his mind and goes homeless. And the book is brilliant because of the way in which it sort of works with magical realism to take you in these different psychic spaces. And you think, boy, Hollywood could do this. And by the way, starring Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson, so no lack of a budget for this film, and absolutely couldn't bring you into those spaces because they were also, you were either in a homeless shelter or you were in some other place. So when Hollywood doesn't do it, it's sort of an amazing thing that you would think it's easy to do this, but it takes some work and some imagination.
And you read a book and you see the movie and you say, well, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
because it didn't match up to what your concept was.
Particularly in this case. Yeah, but Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson, you think. Didn't work. Hey, we've got more, though. There's lots of movies to talk about. Movies on the radio. We're going to talk about places in the universe that you want to be. Albany in the 1910s. Maybe not that place. I don't know. Laura Boies is the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art, but also the Movie Diva film series.
Maybe that's just too much.
No. No, we did, but you do that.
I do that.
And it's at the Carolina Theater. So let's talk about the breadth of your experience and knowledge. And Marcia Gordon teaches all those youths.
All the youths.
At North Carolina State University.
And had an article published in Cineast Magazine.
Yes, just days ago.
There you go. So you see the depth and the breadth. The one who's out of his league here is me. I'm Frank Stacio on The State of Things. There's more to come on Movies on the Radio. Stay tuned.
The opportunity's on. And if you find a new way, you can do it today. You can make it all true. And you can make it undo.
This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Movies on the Radio today. We wanted to know what movie universe you most want to live in. Our guests are film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. And why don't we get to our next pick?
Hi, I'm Christian Alsenik, calling from Cary, North Carolina. And I picked Star Wars because I feel like a huge amount of people who all look and sound completely different working together to fight a great evil is something anybody would want to be a part of. And I feel like traveling the stars and seeing all sorts of different things would be an exciting day-to-day life. And I know that anyone would want to fly an X-Wing starfighter or use a lightsaber every day.
They must be dead by now. Destroy what's left of them.
Check it out, Corporal. We'll cover you. Roger, roger. Uh-oh. Blast him.
What is going on down there?
We lost the transmission, sir.
Have you ever encountered a Jedi Knight before, sir?
Well, no, but I don't. Seal off the bridge!
Yes, sir.
That won't be enough, sir.
I want Roidikas up here at once!
We will not survive this.
And they didn't. Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace. Star Wars, quite a franchise, hey?
Yes. For me, the original three movies are the ones that really resonate the most. Yeah. Those characters, sort of the lo-fi kind of special effects. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wanted to be Princess Leia as a kid. I mean, that was
you
a very common...
You didn't want to be Han Solo?
No.
You know, with those headphones on, you look just like her.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the nicest thing you've ever said. But I mean, who doesn't have the lightsaber fantasy?
Yes.
That was such a great invention as a weapon. And, you could even... listening to the clip, it's the sound of the lightsaber.
It's the sound, yes.
That's what's so awesome.
Well, that's what I found in trying to find clips. I've got 3,000 movies to choose from.
Right.
350 million hours of clips. And I came to the conclusion that the star of Star Wars is, in fact, John Williams.
Yeah.
Because there's only music. I was trying to look. I needed dialogue only because that's the way it works in radio. And I couldn't find it.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if every time you did something, you got to hear that soundtrack you know, rushing in to affirm every move you make.
Don't you think we should have one of those like little loudspeakers so that we have actual incidental music that follows our lives?
It's only a matter of time.
Called your iPhone.
No, but do we play it? That's like when I want to be able to, when I get splashed by the puddle, the bus goes by, I want to go, wah, 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 wah. Don't you want that? I don't know. Let's get to our next pick, shall we?
Hi, my name is Charlie Shelton Orman. I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina, and my pick is The Lord of the Rings. Within the story of The Lord of the Rings, we mostly see Middle Earth and the Shire during wartime. And so if I were to have my pick, I would definitely choose to live in the Shire when it was a peaceful time, when no war was going on, because the Shire is just a very peaceful place inherently. Hobbits that live in the Shire really appreciate the simple life. They appreciate community, farming, a good ale.
I wonder if we'll ever be put into songs or tales.
What?
I wonder if people will ever say, let's hear about Frodo and the ring. And they'll say, yes, it's one of my favorite stories.
Frodo was really courageous, wasn't he, Dad?
Yes, my boy. The most famousest of hobbits. And that's saying a lot.
You've left out one of the chief characters. Samwise the Brave. I want to hear more about Sam.
So I think that just living there and enjoying the community and also being exposed to a semi-regular visit from Gandalf the Wizard could be a really enjoyable time.
That is our own Charlie Shelton Ormond. You'll recognize that name as one of the former, is the former producer of The State of Things. Left us for the wilds of Ireland.
Did he say if he wanted to be a hobbit or not, or just that he wanted to be in the world?
He thinks the world is a good place. Okay. By the way, in his priority, what he said was the simple life, community, and a good ale. I know Charlie, and the order actually of preference is much different for me.
It sounds exactly like the Bronx in 1955.
Yeah, well, it does. Well, it's not dissimilar from Marty at all, right? Yeah. In some ways, it's just, or from some of the other films we've talked about.
Just more orcs.
That is a sentence never uttered on this show before. The other thing about it is it's a story about storytelling, right? And it's a story about creating places through storytelling. And so very much that, and I think what you illustrated in that clip and others is how storytelling can, within the imagination, create a space that may or may not be the place you're actually living in.
Right. That it's a reflection, kind of like The Wizard of Oz. Yep. Even the fantasy world is a reflection of your daily world.
Here's the world we're already living in, I think.
Hi, my name is Napoleon Wright II, and I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. And I chose The Matrix. One of my favorite scenes is at the end when Neo is fighting the agents, and he realizes that everything in the world is zeros and ones, and he looks up, and the agents shoot at him, and he basically stops the bullets, and he's starting to see the world for what it really is.
Let us find out where this goes. You too. Get the Kimiko.
That's a nice trick.
I cannot go back. I'll handle them.
Handle us. You'll handle us. You know your predecessors had much more respect. Okay, you have some skill.
One of the reasons why I chose The Matrix is because I feel like that's where the world is very much headed, whether we're in our phones or on computers or whatever it may be. A lot of our interactions with each other are digital, and we end up trusting those interactions as if they're real. And so I really do feel that it's only a matter of time before all of us start to see The Matrix, whether we realize it or not.
1999, The Matrix.
It is a question for our time. What is real as more and more becomes simulated and distracting? And so whether you like it or not, maybe that's the point, right? That's the world.
No, but also Hollywood's ability to render this, and maybe this gets back to my discourse on Ironweed, which is where they couldn't do that, whereas in The Matrix, and I think Fight Club is another film in which the space of the imagined and real bursting in on each other, penetrating the liminal space, I think was pretty well rendered Hollywood style, and that makes it a kind of fun space to think about whether you want to live there or not.
Well, and the, you know, a dark fantasy is how do you survive the dystopia or how do you survive the apocalypse? And those kinds of fantasy worlds make you feel empowered to be the survivor.
Yeah, I think that that's a very good point. Whether you want to live there because it's a good place to be or whether you'd like to test yourself against this pretty difficult and mm-hmm. ugly situation, which is the other fantasy that we have when we watch movies, right?
Yeah, and I mean, and this, of course, seeps into television, too. I'm thinking about things like Walking Dead and all that kind of how to survive in a time of zombies or whatever the thing is. I mean, it becomes video game-like in its making you think as you're watching it how you would navigate the same waters. And that's part of the, I think, even something like Star Wars or The Matrix or Star Trek.
Would I really, after having robbed from the rich, give it back to the poor or would I keep it?
I would definitely give it back to the poor.
You're living in Sherwood Forest. There's nothing there. It's your chance to buy those glamorous gowns.
I was going to say, there's no Adrian gowns to buy. So what good is the money? I'll just shoot the king's deer. Get it over with.
Venison for a year. Here we go.
My name is Nick Knittle from Durham. The movie universe I would most like to live in is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's a scene in Spider-Man Homecoming where the Peter Parker is in gym class and Hannibal Buress is the gym coach. And he puts on a taped PSA from Captain America talking about the presidential fitness challenge.
Hi, I'm Captain America. Whether you're in the classroom or on
the
battle.
Do you know him too? Yeah, we met. The difference between success, I stole his shield.
Or failure. Today, my good friend, your gym teacher, will be conducting the Captain America Fitness Challenge.
Thank you, Captain. I'm pretty sure this guy's a war criminal now, but
whatever. I have to show these videos. It's required by the state. Let's do it.
And I thought it was a really unique way to show just how these superheroes have infiltrated everyday life by this point. I think growing up, I identified most with Spider-Man because he was a pretty ordinary, nerdy kid who wasn't the most popular and had trouble fitting in. And he suddenly has these superpowers that he has to deal with and all the while trying to maintain this normal, average, everyday life.
Should I tell Liz that I'm Spider-Man?
Who is Liz?
Who's Liz? She's she's the best. She's awesome. She's just a girl who goes to my school. And, I really want to tell her, but it's kind of weird, you know? Hey, I'm Spider-Man.
What's weird about that?
And what if she's expecting someone like Tony Stark? I mean, imagine how disappointed she'd be when she sees me.
Well, if I were her, I wouldn't be disappointed at all.
Thanks, Karen. It's really nice to have somebody to talk to.
As someone who also struggled to fit in a lot of ways, I feel like Peter Parker was the most down-to-earth of all the other superheroes. He always tried to do the right thing, but sometimes failed and had to learn how to deal with those failures.
Spider-Man Homecoming.
Well, I cannot say enough, as someone who teaches at NC State and is around a lot of people who are 18 to 22, how important the Marvel Universe is for especially the generation coming up now. And last semester I did this class on gangsters and cowboys and superheroes and taught a number of these films. And I think that the appeal, especially of those characters that are somewhat ordinary, right, because that's one of the major types that can become extraordinary. I mean, even something like Ant-Man, North Carolina's own Peyton Reed directed, which is about a kind of ordinary guy who's kind of a screw up and trying to redeem himself with his, you know, daughter and all this stuff. It's that kind of allure of any one of us being able to have the powers if we just had the suit.
Well, one of the things that's fascinating to me about this film is that much of it was filmed in the few blocks around where my daughter lives in New York City. So it's the Marvel Universe version of a place that I know very vividly by the 7 train. And mm-hmm. we were visiting her a couple of years ago, and there were notices on all of the light poles. If you hear explosions, do not call 911. We're filming a Spider-Man movie. And then to see the bodega on the corner blow up, it's like, yeah, this is real life, and it's not real life, and it's a very strange juxtaposition.
Well, and when you talk about wanting to be the hero and wanting to transform the world, I mean, I wonder how much of this, when you put out the question, the universe you want to live in, and think about the movie you saw, has to do with imagining you're transforming that universe. You're being a part of a place that is dystopic, maybe, or seeing the connections between a fantastic world and the obvious world that you live in.
Real/not real.
Well, and getting to do something extraordinary, right? Because so many of us, I mean, we just go about our ordinary lives and what
Well,
these...
speak for yourself, Marcia.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm Radio Man.
I'm just ordinary. Laura's doing the work of a superheroine. That's right. But the point is, if I may, that these characters that can go beyond what normal people are able to do. I mean, yeah, of course that's appealing.
Some of them have to be taught how to go beyond.
My name is Katie Lucas, and I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina. And if I had to choose a cinematic universe to live in, it would definitely be the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. I absolutely want to have my mail delivered by owls.
Oh, Miles here.
Hey, look, Neville's got a remembrall.
I've read about those. When the smoke turns red, it means you've forgotten something.
The only problem is, I can't remember what I've forgotten.
Hey, Ron, somebody broke into Gringotts. Listen, believed to be the work of dark wizards or witches unknown, Gringotts goblins, while acknowledging the breach, insist nothing was taken. The vault in question, number 713, had in fact been emptied earlier that very same day. That's odd. That's the vault Hagrid and I went to.
I want to bewitch my broomsticks to clean for me, although my Roomba does a good job too. I think I would probably want to be a professor at Hogwarts. Something so magical about that school, and I just don't feel like any of the other jobs in the wizarding world would quite live up to it.
It's Katie talking about Harry Potter.
She is not alone in her desire to be in Hogwarts and the bazillions of books and movies and dollars and pounds that J.D. Rowling has received. Totally worthwhile as far as I'm concerned.
But it's a scary place, isn't it?
Well, but all of these worlds have the scary in them. I mean, none of them are, and you know, that's maybe an interesting part of it is that if you have the skills to navigate the scary, right, then it's okay. But I also wonder, too, if this is kind of on a through line from the Peter Pan story or if it's somehow like the inverse of it in terms of not wanting to grow up versus kind of growing up and learning and evolving.
Yeah, learning how to grow up, which is, I think, a better way of managing
it.
It is
kind of magic, and it is kind of dark magic to become an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
And
no,
you
it's hard work. Actually.
You certainly need a school that's going to guide you through all of the pitfalls.
And then, oddly enough, in the world of like the Marvel characters, you know, so many of them are adults that then get to kind of play by becoming these other things and putting on the suit and having powers that go beyond them. So that's maybe taking that, you know, adult evolution, but then also undermining it with this very kind of youthful sense of play.
It's a sense of play, but again, understanding that you have a power and now you've got to learn how to use it.
Right.
And maybe it comes with a costume and maybe it doesn't. But one way or another, you got to acknowledge the gift and then put it on the ground or take it in the air if you can fly.
And
that's your power.
And Hogwarts is that same community that you feel that strong affinity with, nurturing and challenging. And
let me tell everybody about the great things you're about to do. Laura Boys is going to host a screening of Why Be Good at the Carolina Theater in Durham on Wednesday, August 29th at 7 o'clock, part of the Movie Diva film series. Marcia is hosting a screening of Bombshell, the Hedy Lamarr story, on Thursday, September 13th at the James B. Hunt Jr. Library at North Carolina State University. We have all that information at our website, stateofthings.org. So you're busy.
Busy.
And you spent time with us on Movies on the Radio. Next time, we're going to talk about movies about artists and art.
Love this.
I think it's going to be great.
So interesting.
Let's see what people come up with on that. I think
we've
that's
got an
great.
Arty crowd listening to the show. I think they're going to do a good job.
Art is where it's at. And you've been listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a program produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.